TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to Saddle Up, our Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing, and apparently someone else. Matthew, I'm sorry, I'm caught a little off guard. I wasn't expecting you to bring a date to this recording.
This is so awkward. I'm sorry. I guess I should have mentioned that beforehand. I'm really sorry, Chris. I know that we hadn't made public our breakup to everyone. Oh goodness. Oh. Mm. We should just start the episode or show or something. We could talk this out later.
I guess so. I mean, when you went away on that 3-month thing, I wasn't expecting. I
tell you that I was leaving, and you seemed okay with it. Oh my goodness. I just, this is getting awkward.
Is
anybody still listening?
Well, I hope so, because we're going to talk about the second episode of season 3 today, Wedding Bell Blues. And here is a quick rundown of the story. Nurse Chapel wraps up her 3-month fellowship with Dr. Corby by returning to the Enterprise to celebrate Federation Day with a big glass of awkward. It's a spirit the ship's Vulcan bartender can work with, especially since he turns out to be none other than galactic trickster Trelane. But he's not just a drink slinger. He's also a wedding planner and an Andorian. At least that's how he appears to Spock and the rest of the crew as they prepare for a celebration of his and Chapel's love for one another. Corby, channeling Guinan a la yesterday's Enterprise, realizes that the timeline has changed, and while he manages to snap Spock out of the delusion, they can't get anyone else on board, at least not until the last moment when Daddy Q shows up to scold Junior. All right, so here we are. We knew that Chapel was going away. She's been away. 3 months have passed since the end of the incident with the Gorn. And so we see changes with various characters in here. And of course, one of the big changes is Chapel comes back and she brings her new boyfriend, Roger Corby, to the Enterprise for Federation Day. Awkward, for sure. Yeah. Yep.
This is one of the things we began the discussion in the last episode, but I think it really comes to full fruition here of Chapel's and this is an incredibly human thing to do, to be entirely inconsistent with what you say and then what you do, right? But I think that the actions that she portrays here is somebody who really doesn't care about other people's feelings, mm-hmm. And really only cares about herself and trying to make herself happy. And it is on broad display for everybody to see in this episode because I just think of the way in which she's treated Spock is pretty terrible. Mm-hmm. If you went away, right, and then you didn't talk to the person for 3 months and you come back with a new boyfriend, especially with the way you left things, that's the height of disrespect. I mean, Spock deserved a subspace FaceTime to say, hey, I just want you to know I've met somebody and I wanted to tell you face to face through subspace. Because I respect you and I respect the relationship that we had, but I'm moving on and I need you to know that, you know. And yes, that's an incredibly difficult conversation to have, but it's also the adult thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's the right thing to do. And I think it is frustrating to kind of see a character kind of spiral into this selfish spiral. Mm-hmm. And not really seem to care about Spock's feelings, like, at all. Mm-hmm. Especially, I mean, she even invites him to come to drinks as if like, hey, we're buddies and we're pals, not like we used to be lovers and I know you're still in love with me, but come hang out with me and my new boyfriend and all of our friends. Like, dude, come on. That is cold. That is stone cold.
Well, beyond that, to then act so uncomfortable during the drinks because of the topics that are coming up. Like, of course, you had to know that these things were going to come up, right? You've got all these, you have all your other crewmates around you who want to know what's going on. So that technology, by the way, you're talking about, I think Future Space Apple, they call that Subface, right?
Subface. Oh, Subface. This is strange. It doesn't sound as nice as Subspace FaceTime. Subface is like, is that your real face or is that just your subface?
Right. Well, you don't know, right?
You know, it's true. I mean, because, you know, by that point, AI can create any face you want. So do you, I mean, geez, I mean, honestly, trying to find a date, you know, via like Subspace Tinder is awful because, anyway.
Yeah. Well, maybe Chapel's been trying that. Who knows? But the thing about Chapel for me is, as I mentioned in the previous discussion, I still think this is the character she's been all along. Even before the whole thing with Spock came up, we saw that she is this kind of woman who isn't interested in any kind of serious relationship. She has trouble getting close to people. She warned Spock. She tried to avoid that relationship starting, but then it did start. And then let's see where it goes, right?
Right.
I think because of the kind of person that she was established as from the beginning, I don't think that it's surprising that she would go away on this fellowship for 3 months and then fall in love with Dr. Corby.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me for who she is as a character. I don't think she necessarily sees it as anything long-term at this point. Because am I wrong that... So in the original series, of course, Corby is Chapel's fiance. That's in What Are Little Girls Made Of? But at this point, when they come aboard the Enterprise at the beginning of this episode, they're just a couple at this point, right? They're not engaged, literally engaged, right?
I don't believe they're literally engaged here. And look, I do believe that you're absolutely right. This is the character that we've been portraying and everything. And maybe an interesting part of the story will be to see if this character does do any growing then in this period. But the way in which she's handled this whole situation is obviously really terrible. And again, to kind of come on the Enterprise and almost pretend like she's done nothing wrong and Spock does not deserve a better conversation, especially since she walks into his trying to give back the gift he gave her and then is like, yeah, when I figure that out, I'll let you know. It's like so flippantly, it's just awful. Like, at least to try to explain it to him in some way, shape, or form, because...
And
again, you're right. This is the character. But when you say, hey, I'm not looking for anything serious, and then you go off and get another serious boyfriend, like, okay, you're talking out of both sides of your mouth right now, and like, now I just don't believe anything you say, and you just, you legitimately come off as a really terrible person.
Yeah. But I'm not sure how serious she actually sees this whole thing, right?
I mean, like, they seem in terms of long term.
Yeah,
they seem pretty serious.
It could be fleeting for someone like her. It could be serious, feels that way in the moment, but we'll see. I think she clearly, in her reactions, knew that it was going to be uncomfortable or awkward for Spock, but I don't necessarily think that she feels strongly inside that she's betraying him or hurting him or anything. I think all these relationships for her are just kind of fun. Let's see what happens in the moment. Let's see where they go. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess maybe. But for her to think that, especially with the depth that they portray the relationship that she has with Corby in this episode, where she's mm-hmm. legitimately told him things that she's never told
sure.
Spock.
Yeah.
This is clearly a different type of relationship for her, at least the way they're trying to portray it, right? And so, again, I think it's just one of those places where they're trying, I don't know if they're trying to have their cake and eat it too with this character or what, but what the way they're writing this character, I'm disinclined to like her.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, I put myself in the, I think everybody just kind of puts themselves in the shoes of Spock and yeah. the way that he's been wronged and disrespected sure. emotionally.
Yeah.
Especially when Chapel already knows the difficulty Spock has with his emotional
mm-hmm.
nature in the first place.
Yeah.
I think that's where the real disrespect comes in and is very hard to watch somebody just kind of get stepped all over.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I almost wish, I'll just go ahead and say, because maybe we can just start talking about it, but I think that this episode should have been about that in a mm-hmm. very serious way.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode does not allow for the serious nature of what Spock and Chapel are going through to actually be portrayed and mm-hmm. dealt with, I think, seriously and tenderly and emotionally, because this entire episode is a joke. And mm-hmm. it's a joke about them being played with by an omnipotent being. And therefore, all of the real emotion of the episode is kind of stripped out because mm-hmm. we're going to play this joke. And these characters, they've spent 2 seasons building this relationship, and they deserve more than this BS that we got in this episode.
Mm-hmm. I think the writers don't want to explore that emotional depth with these two characters. I don't think they're interested in exploring that in the first place.
I mean, then don't mm-hmm. write this relationship in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just treat it like they did on TOS, where she's in love with him and he doesn't respond. But don't mm-hmm. set an expectation that we're going to deal legitimately with these characters and their emotional core, especially mm-hmm. with Spock, and then whiplash us emotionally by not actually allowing us to have feeling that we all have. Because, you know, whether you're on the side of like Chapel in this episode or whether you're on the side of Spock in this episode, I think everybody could admit they would like to have a much more character-driven story here than this weird plot contrivance story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have an issue with this story being the type of story it is if there's more to the arc. So if in the next episode they actually have them talk about what happened and explore it, then I don't mind this one too much, because I actually quite enjoy this episode as a standalone story. Now, I don't think they're going to do that because they've clearly set Chapel up as someone who doesn't want to talk about it. She even tells Corby at the end, let's go dance and never talk about this again, right?
Which just, yeah, it makes her a very frustrating character. And I mm-hmm. think you're probably right. And it just, it takes a character that I was enjoying in the first couple mm-hmm. seasons and makes them a character that I don't really care to see on screen very much mm-hmm. because I just don't really like them right now.
Mm.
I would hope that they will grow in some yeah. ways, but at least at this moment, there's literally no growth happening. They're willingly stagnating themselves. And so mm-hmm. hopefully they will turn this into something more interesting.
Mm-hmm. When I think about it, I'm trying to think, how do they get from, again, assuming, take their word for it, that this is the prime timeline and they're trying to lead us into the original series that we know. How do you take this Spock and how do you take this Chapel and take us from here to the characters that we know that they are in the future? I can see it a little bit more with Spock, or at least I think that what they may be doing with the writing of all this and the emotional Spock, which is something I actually have as a separate item for us to talk about, but maybe we'll just merge it in here. The Spock that we have seen basically throughout all of Strange New Worlds is a more emotional Spock than we're accustomed to from the original series. And the fact that he is like that works okay for me at this point in time because of what happened in Discovery and the experiences that he had with his sister and then what happened with her, him losing her. I mean, she didn't actually die, but for him, she's gone. So the impact of all of that, I can understand in combination with him being half human and the influence of his mother, who's, I think, very well portrayed in Discovery. All of that, I can understand him being a bit more emotional at this younger age. And they may be doing things like this with the Chapel storyline to actually cause him to start closing off his emotions so that by the time we get to the original series, he has shut out these emotions because he's been hurt.
Yeah.
And then he becomes the very, very logical Spock that we know from the original series. Yeah. I think that may be what they're trying to do with a lot of the writing surrounding him, how he's being portrayed by Ethan Peck, and also specifically the storyline with Chapel. For Chapel, it seems like I can see a clearer path for Spock. Let's put it that way. For Chapel, I think it's a less clean path in terms of writing of how they're framing her right now for her to become the Chapel that we know
right
in the original series.
Yeah, I mean, the Chapel one doesn't make sense at all, mainly because you don't get the sense from TOS that she, like, in the first season, especially of the original series, that she's engaged to Roger Corby at all. Mm-hmm. And you don't even know if they know. It doesn't even seem like they know each other.
Well, so it's sort of like Spock and T'Pring in the original series as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, who maybe Scotty had a fiance that we never ran into. Who knows? Yeah. Everybody's got one out there somewhere.
Could be. But yeah, I think part of what you said about Spock could 100% be true. But I also feel like what we see with Chapel, like you said, it makes all of this really hard to come together and make sense with kind of what we know with the prime timeline, which, you know, you're always trying to make it work. And I've just given up on that. And so I'm more just interested in the storyline for the two characters and how it plays out. And I have enjoyed the fact that this has allowed Spock to really explore part of himself that we don't really get to see him explore much. The difference between him and the cage, and then, of course, in the original series is very interesting, of course. So that's it. But the real discussion becomes when we get to the films, right? And where Spock's emotional core really comes to light, especially by the time you get to the end of Star Trek VI, where we truly see Spock embracing what it means to be Vulcan and human and merging them together. And so I don't really have any issues with us exploring that here in this series. I think it makes for an interesting thing. I think it's a little ridiculous that we just have a shirt off for no good reason.
I noticed that as well.
I guess Ethan Peck, you know, he's definitely got the pecs. And so, good for him. He definitely looks nice, in that sense, but
it would have been great if Pike had called him on the view screen and once again said, are you naked?
Yeah. So Spock, put a shirt on. Jeez, man.
Every time I call you,
you're shirtless. What are you doing? I mean, and it's weird because he's just like walking around his quarters with no shirt on for no good reason. And that was odd. So
actually, it does kind of make sense because he was trying on an outfit, right? So I get it, but I thought it was, but obviously it's kind of funny for you, like you don't need to do that. They're obviously trying to show you Ethan Peck's pecs.
Exactly.
But I thought it was funny though, that he can't decide between two blue tunics that are
exactly the same. Yeah. So the relationship between Spock and Chapel plays such a big part in here, but can I just say though, the best part of this episode to me was the beauty of Pike and Patel.
Oh, I thought you were going to say La'an being a prima ballerina.
No, was just so wonderfully done.
Yeah, it was.
Especially since we didn't talk about this in the previous episode, but one, we obviously learned that Pike comes from a family of faith, you know, and then we learned in this episode he was an altar boy. So kind of fascinating to see that Pike has this, you know, very spiritual, traditional kind of Catholic upbringing, right?
Well, that does tie in to the second episode of Discovery Season 2, where we also can see that in Pike, that he has that background.
But I liked that here, but I also just loved the way in which he and Batel have that conversation where he's talking about what do you want? He's not pressuring her or anything. And what we see there is that really what they want is they just want to be together.
Yeah.
And so I would be very interested to see how this works itself out then in the rest of the season, because I could absolutely see her being willing to take a job which allows her to see Chris much more often than not. Because that's where they both are. They're willing, it seems like, to kind of make those type of decisions for one another. And it just felt like there's such a dichotomy between their relationship, which is such an adult relationship, and this ridiculous, childish, you know, teenage relationship that you're getting with, you know, Spock and Chapel. And I just really appreciate it because that is much more rewarding and enjoyable to watch. Because look, and I'll say this, when Strange New Worlds is kind of at its worst is when it comes off as a YA novel feel. And this episode feels like that in multitudes, and I don't enjoy it. I like my Star Trek to be above that. And Strange New Worlds in general is, starting in season two and then now moving into season three, really seems to be leaning more into that feel. I'm just not enjoying it as much because you can write great relationships and great characters and stuff without it having to feel like they're all arrestedly developed as characters. And that's what I loved about the Pike and Batel story because they feel like full adults who are having adult conversations about an adult relationship that really helps me then care about that relationship because it feels real.
Well, from a writing standpoint, you could look at that as being an intentional contrast because Kirsten is presenting both types of relationships in this episode. And so you can see side by side how those differ, what they're like for the people involved in them as well. You could look at it that way. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, I can imagine Batel actually staying aboard the Enterprise for a while. Like, she's probably not going to be in a rush to take a command of another ship. And especially because, you know, after these two episodes, they've only got eight more episodes to work with anyway. So you just keep her around for a while.
And not only that, but I mean, you know, we actually have seen in Star Trek, right? We've seen more than one captain on a ship at a time. You know, the original series, the crew of the Enterprise, they're all captains. I mean, you get Scotty's a captain and Spock is a captain and, you know, Kirk is a captain and, you know, so.
That tends to usually be simply because they have been in the service for so long that they've advanced in rank, not because they actually typically command a crew.
Right. So, but I was just saying that to back up your point. I could see them asking to serve on the same ship.
Maybe they can take on the rank of co-captain.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, they could just split the chairs like Chakotay and Janeway did, and, you know.
They'll just get one like extra wide, like a little love seat on the bridge.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Wow. If this bridge is a rockin', don't come a knockin'. So, you know.
That's right.
You didn't see the sock on the door? Come on, guys.
Okay, they can do that. But yeah, that I did like that part of the episode for sure. Okay, well, let's talk about obviously the really big part of this episode that has everybody kind of stirred up, which is the appearance of Trelane. So my experience watching this the first time is that they're in the scene in the bar, they're having the cocktails, Spock is dejected, he walks over to the bar, and the bartender's there. And then the bartender gives him the other drink, and I said out loud, oh, is that Trelane? And of course, my wife has no idea who Trelane is because she's never seen the original series. And very quickly to me, obviously, okay, it's Trelane. That they brought Trelane in here. Yes. And it becomes super clear as the episode goes that this is Trelane, right?
Yeah.
And everything from Rhys Darby's appearance, the hair, the mutton chops, the costume design, just the mannerisms, he really captured Trelane really well. And the designers captured Trelane really well. So there was never any doubt in my mind that that's Trelane, right? But if you look at the credits, the name Trelane is not in the credits. He's just credited as the wedding planner. All right, so I noticed some comments online, people having this huge debate, you know, in typical 2025 fashion, everybody's got to be at everybody's throats and everybody's stupid for having an opinion. But everyone's arguing about, is it Trelane, is it not? And I read one article where the writer himself would not commit to this being Trelane. He gave three options and he's like, well, but they never say Trelane in the episode, so it could be Trelane or it could not. And then,
oh my gosh.
I was like, just be honest with yourself. It's obviously Trelane. Everything, even the little musical cues are like right out of the original series, Squire of Gothos. Obviously Trelane, right? Now, where it gets muddy is the Trelane Q connection. So, you know, for years and years and years, there's been fan speculation that Trelane is actually part of the Q continuum. And in my headcanon, he's part of the Q continuum. And that's been explored in the novels as well. And I think one misstep, in my opinion, just as a viewer, I think one misstep in this episode is the decision to have John Delancey do the voice of Trelane's father. Because when you do that, then that's Q, right? It has to, has to be Q because it's John Delancey's voice. And so, and then Trelane calls him dad.
Yep.
So then you get into, okay, so are we saying that Trelane is Q's son, like literally Q's son, which on the surface doesn't make much sense. But then, if you think about the idea that, well, the Q can go anywhere in time, you know, time isn't really linear for them. And it's said in this episode that Trelane is 8,020 years old. So some of the speculation I saw people debating each other online as well, is Trelane actually Junior from Voyager, from Q2? My initial reaction was, well, that doesn't make any sense because it's later down the timeline. But then if I think, well, okay, well, time's not linear. And Trelane's behavior, it fits the description of Junior's behavior and why the continuum wanted to kick him out and just and make him human in Q2. Sure. So it's all kind of really muddy. I think that they should have just never treaded into this in the first place, but they did. And so let me tell you one more thing, and then I'll let you share your thoughts on it. So TV Insider was talking to Akiva Goldsman and Henry Alonzo Myers about this story, and Goldsman and Myers confirmed that Rhys Darby is playing Trelane. In the article, they say, Trelane, the mischievous childlike alien, he's only 8,020 Earth years old, very young, originally played by William Campbell on TOS, of course. And yes, having Q himself voice his father does mean that Q is Trelane's father. Goldsman says, quote, this is confirmation of that very smart piece of headcanon that we now have absorbed into canon gratefully. And then he goes on to explain the reason that they brought in Trelane is because, quote, he's a great character from the original series, and also we did feel that was sort of unresolved, dangling, and it seemed intuitively quite smart to connect the two. From the outside, one could say, look, you have a character created by Roddenberry in one, you've got a character created by Roddenberry in another. He's revisiting a kind of idea, refining it. So why not connect them up when you have the opportunity to do so? Since someone had cleverly done it without us, we just thought, well, let us bless that idea because it was a good one. Okay, well, that's one way of looking at it, I suppose. But, you know, I would agree that in creating Q, Roddenberry was refining an idea that he had with Trelane in the original series. But if you go back and watch The Squire of Gothos, obviously the way that Trelane goes about the powers that he has is different. And so I don't know that the two things actually connect cleanly. And to make them do so, I think you have to be a bit more careful in how you tie those two things together than what we see here.
This is where writers think they're being clever, They're not clever by half. This isn't clever. It's not. And the reason that it's not is because you have created a situation in which it is so convoluted and you have to do so many mental gymnastics to make things fit. It's just frustrating and not fun. This should look, the whole episode is supposed to be an enjoyable romp. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that it turns into you spending the whole episode doing these mental gymnastics of like, okay, so he's this and this. And then like, oh, but how does that work? You're the best Star Trek writing. When it adds something interesting to canon, doesn't make you have to spend 45 minutes with a spreadsheet and one of those like who murdered who boards with the lines connecting everyone with the yarn
from Lower
Decks to try and figure out how things go. Yeah. This is just not smart. Mm-hmm. It's and then to come out and like play coy about it and then confirm it or whatever. It's like, guys, you think you're being so smart, but you're really just being frustrating. And it's not clever. It's silliness. And so just write a good episode. And this is what had me frustrated with this episode. I don't care that you want to play with Trelane. I don't really care that you want to play with the Q, but this was not the episode to do it. Mm-hmm. This episode is about Spock and Chapel and Corby and the dynamic between those characters. And so by bringing in a character like Q and Trelane, you take away us having any emotional resonance with the most important part of the story. Do this later in the season. And I could have cared less. I probably would have had a lot of fun. But this was just not the place to do it. And the whole ridiculous reasoning of why Trelane is even in this part of the galaxy and like picks Spock to pick on, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, he was following Corby because he said he had seen Corby digging around in the dirt on the old homeworld. Right?
I get that, which is also, they think they're being so clever by adding the fact that the Q had a homeworld back in the day at some point, you know. Mm-hmm. But like for the Q to have evolved to where they are, their homeworld would literally just be nothing but dust and there would be nothing left of it.
So many millennia would have gone by.
Right. Yeah. So this is just another place where you think you're being clever, but it just doesn't really make sense. And so, I've always thought the idea of Trelane being a member of the Q, totally fine, makes sense, kind of fun. But I think you're absolutely right. The whole idea of bringing in John Delancey was the wrong choice. And I think it would have been much more interesting to have that, you know, light ball that he shows up as not be him and just kind of leave it more to the audience's like is that a Q? I mean, he seemed like it was a Q, and it's more fun to have that discussion because, yes, then the whole thing with Voyager and everything about that, it just makes it so messy and silly. And
right.
It's taking away from the part of the episode I actually want to care about that I can't care about anymore because now I'm having to have this discussion. Yeah. And so,
I mean, the Voyager connection, that's not in the episode and that's not in any way being written into it. That's fan speculation. But
But
it's understandable fan speculation because 100%. If you establish that John Delancey's Q is the father of Trelane, well, then, of course, fans are going to start asking questions.
Well, and again, look, the other part about this is my point of view in the sense of I don't connect this to prime timeline. So again, I don't care about all of that, really. What I care about is the characters that I'm dealing with here on Strange New Worlds. And so what I just feel is that there is a disrespect to the actual emotional depth of the storyline for the characters in Strange New Worlds by adding all of this mumbo jumbo that would have been much more fun in an episode later on in the season when we want to have some fun. But the other problem is that I feel that this episode creates a emotional whiplash from the very serious nature of ending the cliffhanger and coming into this episode, which should feel much more probably like an episode like Home in TNG than it should feel like a ridiculous romp where nobody seems affected except for Erica, who we barely deal with until the very end of the episode. And it's like, oh my gosh, this guys, come on, write better.
Well, I mean, I would say, I think other people are affected. I think La'an seems affected, but in a positive way, whereas Erica obviously has trauma. And speaking of Home and speaking as we did in the last episode about ripping off the best of both worlds, the Gorn reflection in the window with Erica is it's basically Picard being haunted by the Borg, right? It's the same thing. So La'an seems like the experience has opened her up to trying new things and trying to be a more open person and all. Great. So I think she's affected, but in the opposite way from Erica. And well, I think, as we talked, I think Pike and Patel are also affected in that they seem more determined to bring their relationship together and have a future together.
Yeah. And I've got to say, I am really loving La'an. And as you get, you know, Spock saying, you know, you really seem to basically be coming out of your shell. You seem to really be embracing life in new ways, which is in this is what I want from our characters in Strange New Worlds. I want to see this growth happening in these characters and, you know, allowing a actress like Christina Chong to really shine, I think, is a lot of fun. You know, she's a good actress, and obviously she's got a lot of range with what she can do. She's a dancer, she's a singer, and all that stuff. And I actually really enjoy the beauty of the friendship that's being created here between her and Spock, where she's not in this to ever try and have a relationship with Spock, and he's not in this for that either. But they're able to be there for one another as real friends. And I think that's actually, that's the kind of stuff that I'm really enjoying. And so I'm really thankful that whole sequence of them where she's teaching him how to dance and and all of that, and her trying to get him to loosen up and kind of embrace parts of himself that, you know, obviously his emotional journey we've talked about. And again, him then recognizing her emotional journey and then being able to have a conversation with that is just really wonderful. I thought all of that stuff was really well done. That's the stuff in this episode that I really enjoyed watching. And I was so thankful that on that side, the writers were giving us good stuff that I'm like, I just want more of this type of stuff in this episode.
All right. Well, any final thoughts? And what's your rating for this one?
As I mentioned, you know, my final thoughts, I think, you know, again, Erica, it being left the last moment to kind of deal with her. I would have loved it there to be kind of almost this underrunning current throughout the entire episode. Just this little bit of discomfort with her so that as we got to that final, that, you know, we're going to deal with that. They've talked about that. I think I've read that in an interview that we're really going to deal with that experience for her, which I think is great. But to me, again, Strange New Worlds, especially with season two and now moving into season three, it has schizophrenia. It cannot figure out the type of show that it wants to be. And taking such wild emotional swings from the end of Hegemony and then into this, it's too much. I think the best Star Trek shows knew when to put in the goofy episode in a place where it didn't feel like I had such a wild swing. It also doesn't help, of course, that these episodes came out on the same day. So that you just literally watch them back to back and you do feel that emotional whiplash. Mm-hmm. So all in all, you know, I would say this is not a very good episode of the series. It's probably one of my least favorite. And I'm going to give this, 1.5 out of 5 dance steps.
Wow.
I really came away very sour from this episode. And so for all the reasons listed. So,
well, if you can only do 1.5 dance steps, you're never going to become a prima ballerina. I can tell you that.
100%. It's 100% true.
All right. Well, so my final thoughts are, I wanted to say one more thing about the whole Trelane thing, because there's something about it that I think it's subtle, but it's critical to understanding Trelane's role in the entire episode. And maybe I was tired when I was watching. Maybe I was having an adult beverage. I don't know, but I didn't pick up on these two things at first. But throughout this episode, what maybe isn't clear to everyone watching is that no one on the ship sees Trelane. They see a Vulcan bartender and they see an Andorian wedding planner. Yep. They don't see Trelane. So when we watch, it's obviously Trelane, even to the point of at one point he says greetings and felicitations. And then he says tally-ho when he's leaving. And it's everything, obviously Trelane, but we see him as Trelane and no one on the ship does.
Right.
And so when Spock goes to the bar, we see the reflection of the Vulcan bartender in the silver tray for a moment, and then the camera pans up and it's Trelane. And then Spock says, I was not aware that we had a Vulcan bartender. And then after Spock and La'an dance for the second time, when time kind of resets, we see the Andorian's reflection in the pad that he's holding up. And then Pike also mentions, well, you know, this Andorian wedding planner is quite a thing. I didn't know Andorians were so into details, but I think that's a critical thing for the whole debate about Trelane and how the character's used and all in the episode. And then Q coming at the end and being the dad and all is that no one sees that. And, you know, maybe it's just me. Like I said, maybe I was tired. Maybe every other viewer on Earth noticed that immediately. But it's done. I like how it's done. It's done in a subtle way.
Sure.
But it is there. So that was one thing.
Yeah.
The other thing that I was not a fan of in this episode is that at the end, when they play Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, I'm not a fan of the use of contemporary music in Star Trek. Same thing happened on Discovery, where they used David Bowie's Space Oddity. I feel like it feels out of place for the time period that this is the music that people are going to be listening to, or that they're going to know and they're going to quote and so forth. The only time I can think of where I think it worked was I liked Magic Carpet Ride in First Contact.
Yes, that made more sense.
And it made sense also because they had already established, first of all, it's a lot closer to our time.
Right.
So it's legitimate to think that music would still be popular. And also they established earlier in the movie that Cochrane was a fan of old music and had the jukebox and all this stuff. So it worked. But I kind of, that you know, the Wham kind of pulled me out of that last scene a little bit.
As Wham often does.
That all said, I am on the other side of the fence with you in terms of the overall episode, though. I actually enjoy this episode. Like, all the things that we talked about in terms of they could have better addressed the relationship with Spock and Chapel, and it could have been a more serious episode in the aftermath of the Gorn conflict. I think all that's true. I think, however, that if I just watch this as a standalone episode, especially being someone who grew up on the original series, it was fun to see Trelane come back. And I think Rhys Darby nailed the character 100%. Wonderful performance. Actually stole the show.
Yeah, no, he's fantastic.
You know, which, you know, maybe that's something where you feel like you've got a guest actor who's outshining the regular cast, who themselves are also excellent. But, you know, I think
well, he's outshining episode. Everything in the episode.
Yeah.
Because he's so good.
Right. And, but I think it's a really, for me, it was a really fun episode and I really enjoyed it. And I came away from it saying, yeah, I really liked that. That was fun. So I see everything that you're saying, but I still like the episode. I think how it sits in the story will depend on what they do after this. If they then come back around and address it, you know, having this kind of break in what's going on with Spock and Chapel being forced on them in a comedic episode with Trelane can still work for me if it's the catalyst for them then finally really discussing it. So we'll have to see, you know, where they go with that for me to really know how I feel about it overall. So anyway, those are my thoughts on it, my final thoughts on it. I actually do like the episode, and so I am going to give it 8 Talarian star gems.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so I thought you were going to give it a bunch of Adosian arms off their back, well, which research, they don't actually exist on their back, guys. The arms are in the front every time we've seen them, so yeah, just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think if I were an Adosian bartender, I would have my front arm surgically removed and put on my back so that I wouldn't keep knocking drinks over all the time.
Put a lot of thought into this.
Yeah, well, I have, yeah. I mean, I need to if I'm going to be the new bartender on the Enterprise.
It's true, exactly.
Which is apparently where that's headed. So, Matthew, I think we've been podcasting together for how long? 14 years or something like that?
Yeah, I think 14 years.
I think this is probably the widest difference ever in a rating for us, probably.
It possibly is.
It might be. Yeah. So, yeah. So. Although we agree on a lot of the points, but the ultimate experience of watching it, I enjoyed it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on Wedding Bell Blues as well. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's a closed group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show and choose saddle up, and that'll come right on over to us by email. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is trekfm. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not figuring out where all your hair products will go in Captain Batel's quarters, where can people find you?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, hopefully they'll all fit, you know, because I wouldn't mind rooming. Anyway, you can find me all over social media under the name Matt Rushing 02. Of course, here on the network outside all the great Star Trek talk with Chris, 602 Club. Got a lot of great stuff happening over there. So please check that out as we talk about all of the franchises outside of Star Trek that we love. You also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with John Mills as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week on Aggressive Negotiations. And there's a completed show there that I did with Drea Kaufman as we talked about Harry Potter, every single chapter of that series, one chapter at a time on Owl Post. But Chris, when you're trying to figure out how to get one of those lucky drinks from that new bartender, where can people find you?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be sure to drink it slowly so it doesn't go straight to my head. Never know what kind of a life event I'll find myself in. When I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all those shows with you. As you mentioned, you can also find me in the back catalog on many shows, and you can find me everywhere in social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y, and I'd love to chat with you there. And if you would like to help us keep this show and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you so much to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, let's hop into a shuttle to Ken Forey for the next show as we continue with season 3. Of Strange New Worlds.
Well, Chris, hit it.